Then the Lord appeared to Solomon at night and said to him, I have heard your prayer and have chosen this place as my house of sacrifice. When I close the sky so that there is no rain, or I order the locusts to consume the land, or I send a plague against my people, if my people who belong to me will humbly pray, seek my face, and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven, forgive their sin, and heal their land.
How can I help? This morning, this is the fifth of five questions from Dr. James Ryan's book, Wait, What? And Life's Essential Questions. Since last month, we have reflected on the following questions from this best-selling book. The first one we talked about was, what truly matters? In other words, are we committing our time, our energy, our resources to things that we claim matter the most to us? The second question was, wait, what? A question that causes us to pause, to wait before we respond or react to a given situation, to seek first to understand and then to be understood. Our third question we reflected on was, I wonder. Wondering what, why, when, and how. Remaining hopeful about the possibilities for our lives, our church, our communities, indeed, our world. And then last week, we reflected on, couldn't we at least try? Couldn't we at least try to listen, to meet one another where we are in a way that offers some mediation between our differences of theology and politics and priorities. And as I shared with you in the beginning of this series, I haven't read the book yet, but I've downloaded it and I plan to read it just as soon as we complete the questions together. For I want to see how closely or how far off my interpretation of the questions relate to Dr. Ryan. So we shall see. How can I help? We hear that question or some derivative of that question quite a bit, don't we? Every time we pull to the drive-through menu, someone on the other end of the speaker asks us if they can help us. And we know that many times that other end of the speaker voice is very tired of helping folks. It's obvious in their tone. I've been that worker before. We ask how we can help because that's a requirement to fill the order and hence a requirement to keep our job. Sometimes we hear someone ask us, how can I help, when it seems obvious that we are clueless as to where the grocery might stock a particular item. Sometimes we hear the resident of a town we're visiting ask, how can I help, when they've watched us circle the block at least five times as we stop to look at our phone, or in some cases, a map. I guess, Deb, of course, some of us still do have maps. Deb does. Indeed, we hear echoes of the question, how can I help, in many, many life situations. And sometimes people ask the question in sincerity, and not simply as a means to an end to fill a drive-through order or to help someone get out of the grocery store or to stop traffic in their neighborhood. That sincere, how can I help? I think that's the question that Dr. Ryan is speaking about. Again, we'll see when I read the book. But whether or not it's closely associated with the book's treatment of the question, I would certainly agree that how can I help is an important and essential life question. We all know that sometimes life is unfair. It's unfair in a way that it seems that some folks have more than their share of challenges. Now, to be sure, some of us face challenges of our own making, perhaps poor decisions on our part, or the absence of a decision, which we know the absence of a decision is really a decision in and of itself, just in a passive way. Yet, more times than not, people face challenges out of their control because it's just life. Life happens. Life can be wonderful. And life can be difficult. It is the beauty and wonder of living. It is confidence and mystery all wrapped up together, this thing called life. And I, like you, I have day-to-day challenges. Most days, though, if I were to put my problems on the table and compare with others for a possible trade, I'd take mine back. Perhaps that's the blessing and the curse of being a pastor. The things that folks share with me on a day-to-day basis, I'll take my problems back. I certainly have some health challenges related to my ongoing back condition, and I ask for prayer for that, as this week I'll be going again for more MRIs for my entire back and possible future surgery again. But that said, I haven't been diagnosed with a terminal illness. There may be a family squabble here or there, but overall I'm grateful that I'm close with my parents, my siblings, my nieces and nephews, an extended family. My work can be challenging in terms of juggling two full-time jobs, but I'm lucky that I enjoy my accounting work. I like to work with numbers and to balance finances. And it goes without saying that this church and my ministry is my passion in life. I have a wonderful and supportive, loving wife and friends so close they feel like family. All in all, really, life is good. Been a good while since there have been any major hurdles or curveballs. Except for those that I put my mitt on for in an attempt to intercept those life curveballs from my dear family and friends. In other words, while things in my life have been pretty smooth, for a good while, not so much with some of those I dearly love. In the short time of our church's history, we've lost some incredibly special members. Herm, Diana, Miss Hattie, Clancy. And recently, we participated in loving both Brenda and David through the loss of their dear moms. And seeing the heartache in those left behind, it's always difficult. In our church, even with some stepping up, the voids of Herm and Diana, of Miss Hattie and Clancy, they're still felt, and in truth, they always will be. In the aftermath of death, we utter the question, how can I help? How can I help with your grief? How can I help with arrangements? How can I help you move forward? In the past couple of years, Brenda and I have been heartbroken that one of our very best friends, Peggy Iglehart, a member here, and our sister, Tricia, both have been diagnosed with and treated for cancer. Of course, we give thanks for their access to health care and their abilities to retire from long-tenured jobs so their energy can be focused on battling this disease. That's not always the case. And we give thanks for their positive attitudes and the ways they've shown us how to deal with health challenges. Yet when we talk to them, we utter, how can I help? And we utter that with genuine concern and ready willingness to do anything we can to make the load a little lighter. In the midst of unexpected and serious medical crisis, we ask with sincerity and deep concern, how can I help? When admittedly, in many of these medical-related cases, we feel so helpless, don't we? Very recently, I've had three separate, very close friends who've had some tough, tough life challenges. One friend has approached me to seek advice on how to avoid bankruptcy. Another friend is having significant issues with an ex-partner, and more specifically as related to visitation and custody of two beautiful kids. The stress of co-parenting has resulted in my friend not sleeping very well and not eating very well. That kind of stress is all too familiar with the third friend who's trying to find her way through a breakup of a 17-year marriage. In an effort to try to be a good and supportive friend in all three of these situations, the question, how can I help, seems to me to be a good place to start. And that might be what is key here. Asking how can I help is a starting point and should not be a rhetorical question. In other words, too often we jump ahead from the answer of how can I help with just assuming how we're going to help and jump right in the middle of a situation. Anybody else do that? When I lost my dad back in 1988, and then when my nephew Jim Doug overdosed in 2005, I wanted to talk about them a lot. I still do. Yet just because that's the way I handle grief doesn't mean that everyone handles grief best by talking. When I was going through my really difficult back surgeries a year or so ago, I was really open about it, posting on Facebook when I was feeling defeated. But some folks are much more private with health crises. There's probably no better example of that than the difference between our friend Peggy and our sister Tricia. Peggy posts openly about her diagnosis, her struggles, her celebrations, on what is now almost a 3-year battle with ovarian cancer. Tricia, on the other hand, is much like her sister. Very private. And asks us specifically not to post anything on Facebook. She has, however, given us permission to share in church, or I wouldn't be doing that in the sermon. But it's taught me that just because Peggy and I post about our health journeys doesn't mean others want to be as public. And while I may be able to offer some concrete advice to a friend who's facing severe financial challenges, that advice becomes much more difficult for a friend finding their way to a what next after a 17-year marriage with some unusual complications. In this latter situation, only two people really know what's going on and has gone on in the relationship, and thus it's my opinion that only those two people can decide to either make or break their marriage. Any opinion I offer is just that, an opinion that is at best probably misinformed and at worst more hurtful than helpful. See, a how can I help question is often extended with the best of intention, and yet sometimes misses the mark altogether. Tucked within our scripture stories can be simple yet profound advice for us. And here in 2 Chronicles, we find one such gem. First, in 2 Chronicles, not mentioned a lot around church circles. Y'all heard anybody preach on 2 Chronicles? Along with other books like Samuel and Kings, the writer of Chronicles gives us a long history of the Hebrew people, including detailed and, frankly, sometimes boring genealogies, descriptions of battle after battle with enemies or oppressors. And scholars believe both Book of Chronicles were written some 400 years before the birth of Jesus, and were written to a Jewish community returning from exile and returning to a destroyed temple. What's that mean? That the first listeners of these chronicles would have lost it all. Family and friends, the war and death, property and careers. And they would have lost their religious sacred ground. Imagine that. Imagine coming to church one Sunday, as some churches have, and someone's vandalized and destroyed the place they call home. They would have been asking, why did this happen to us? How do we move forward from this? So Solomon was praying on behalf of his people, and he kept praying. In other words, Miss Elnora, as you say, it wasn't a one and done prayer. Kept praying. And God appeared to Solomon and offered this advice. Then the Lord appeared to Solomon at night and said to him, I've heard your prayer and chosen this place as my house of sacrifice. When I close the sky so that there's no rain, or I order the locusts to consume the land, or I send a plague against my people, if my people who belong to me will humbly pray, seek my face, and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven, forgive their sin, and heal their land. An application of this scripture in our how can I help question might be this issue of humbleness. In other words, when we are called up or when we voluntarily offer our assistance to a given situation, we should be humble in a way that allows the person in the midst of the crisis to retain some ownership and some dignity of their own lives. Very early in my ministry, one of the most difficult times of pastoral care was to be with a family who sat at the bedside of a loved one transitioning from this life to the next. I'd get the call, and I'd get there as fast as I could. I'd sit out in my car in the parking lot prior to visiting the family, and I'd pray to God to help me say and do the right things to bring comfort to the family. And I got to be honest, I'd be really anxious about how to pray and what to say in a prayer such as that. But these days, I don't experience that anxiousness so much. I still sit in my car and take steps to get grounded. I take deep breaths. I ask God to use me as a vessel. But I don't stress about the prayer, because God led me some years ago to find an alternative way to go about presence and prayer in those most difficult situations. And really, it's such a simple method. Here it is. When I'm attempting to provide pastoral presence or even friend presence, I allow the person going through the crisis to tell me what their need is. Instead of my trying to anticipate, I allow the folks going through tough times, whether grief or financial or relationship, they know what their prayer is for. They know best what they need. They may have the strength to go through that difficult situation, but they may not have peace at all about it. So they may say, Pastor, pray for peace. So I now just ask a version of the how can I help question. And I ask it in humility, recognizing that I don't have the answer to what someone else needs in a particular situation. So I'll say, how can I help you? What are you struggling with? What are you afraid of? What is your prayer? And then I do my best to give voice to their prayer, to give attention to their need. See, friends, asking how can I help means we have humility in knowing that we don't have all the answers, and many times we don't even have the right questions. But asking how can I help before assuming how we can help will launch us in the direction of where we need to go so that we can be helpful. All too often, we stress ourselves completely out by an overwhelming feel of hopelessness as it relates to offering help. But the key, I think, is knowing the difference between our need to control and our need to feel comfortable versus allowing the person going through the crisis to tell us what they need. We must resist doing what many of us just do by our own human tendencies. And that is that we assume what someone needs and we jump ahead to doing it instead of asking, how can I help? And then waiting. And then listening to their answer before we respond. So brothers and sisters, as we move into helpful actions, as we should, let's commit to being humble. To be humble when we ask the question, how can I help you? And then let's meet those needs the way we know how. How can I help is indeed an essential question. May we follow the advice that God gave to Solomon, that he told Solomon to give to his people. If my people who call me by name will humbly pray, I will heal them. May we be humble enough and patient enough to wait for the answer when we ask the question, how can I help?